Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable. Of course, I'm Tommy. Jamie's sitting over there. How you doing, man?
What is up? We're live!
We're live on tape, kind of, whatever. We've got a couple other guys with us as well. We've got our boy Cabbage. What's up, Cabbage?
Not much.
And then we've also got our boy Spider here. What's up, Spider?
I am in the middle of a storm right now, but I'm going to power my way through and give you guys all that gaming content you want.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's fantastic. So, the three of us safe and sound, Spider in the middle of a hurricane, apparently.
It's dedication.
Dedication. Good time. So for this month's roundtable, we don't really know what we're going to talk about, but we're going to kind of figure it out as we go. We are going to talk about some games because at least a couple of people on here have played some games recently. And so that's cool. And also maybe a little bit about the Switch and Epic Games Store and all kinds of fun stuff. But let's start because I'm curious. We just mentioned it in passing and didn't really talk about it before we fired up the mics. So the rumors around the new Switch console and the idea, at least my understanding of one that is portable only, is that everybody else's understanding of this as well. If so, thoughts around that. And I'm going to start with Spider in the Storm because he's the one that mentioned this as something to talk about.
Well, so I'm in an interesting situation because I have a Switch. I love it. It works great. But I could see it being beneficial for other people. It just depends on your situation. I'm not someone who travels a lot, so my Switch actually spends most of its time in the dock when I'm playing games. And so the portable aspect isn't something just me, but I can see some parents wanting to get like a cheaper one that if their kid breaks it, it's easier to replace at a lower cost or something like that. I know a lot of people were skeptical of the 2DS when it came out, but it sold pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see what develops from that.
Yeah, I think the 2DS is actually an interesting analog there because I was very skeptical of the 2DS. Like, it seemed like the dumbest idea to me that, like, yeah, here's the 3DS without the 3D component of it. But Spider's right. It did sell really well. And my experience with the Switch is I play it in handheld mode all the time. Once in a while in dock, but very rarely. I couldn't tell you the last time I played it in docked mode. And to be fair, I haven't played a big game on it in a while either. I played Super Smash Brothers on it. I've only played Super Smash Brothers in handheld mode. So, if the price point is right, I think that's the key. I could see how it would be valuable. Cabbage, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. It is the most Nintendo thing to do to make, a console that has we can call it a gimmick, not to say it's bad, but it is essentially kind of a gimmicky thing of, the Switch, although it works really well. But it's a very Nintendo thing to do to just say, hey, here's a new version that doesn't do that. Uh-oh. The storm has broken in. It's taken over.
Sorry, I hit the mute button.
Oh, this is the best part.
This is the best.
We don't need to say anything else. We'll just have, all right. But yeah,
I shouldn't have said anything because I wouldn't have noticed if you didn't say anything.
But yeah, it's, so from what I've heard, and I don't know if this has changed, maybe I'm out of the loop, but what I've heard is there's like strong indications that there's not only a, maybe slightly cheaper straight up handheld. It might kind of be in the vein of the 2DS, but then they're also planning a more powerful, bigger Switch.
Yeah.
The idea, I don't know if those are released at the same time or not. With Nintendo, you can only apply the standards that they've set before to themselves because they don't like adhere to normal market like practices. Like, not that Microsoft doesn't do weird things too, because they made their discless console that like nobody would want because all it does is give you less things. But, I could easily see them releasing the, hey, you can get for the original price of the Switch, $300, whatever it was. Now you can get a slightly more powerful one or for like $250 or whatever it might be. Or maybe they do $199. That'd be really impressive. You know, you can get the Switch, but it just doesn't dock and it's all portable. I really think that, like you're saying, the 2DS seemed dumb, but it ended up selling really well. Because honestly, like, especially when these, like, the new Pokemon games are coming out, I think at the end of the year, that's their big thing. And that's what they always pushed their 3DS with, I think. I feel like that's what sold the majority of those handhelds everywhere, internationally. Like, I think that it's always been the system seller, or the, you know, the yearly or whatever Pokemon titles. So when those come out, it would make sense that they would time it with a little bit cheaper, aiming even more towards the 3DS market to try to get that 3DS user base or consumer base, like, fully shifted over to the Switch. Of course, you call it the Switch, now it doesn't switch. I wonder if they're going to pull, I wonder if they're going to pull Nintendo and make a goofy name like the 2DS or the unswitched. Exactly. Like, it's the unswitchening, like, just go full out, like, just make it really dumb. But I will say, I personally wouldn't buy the portable one, because I'm actually the difference from you. I spent most of my time on the Switch docked. But for people that travel a lot, and if I did travel a lot for work or something like that, I would actually probably get the just straight up handheld one anyway.
Yeah, I think that's the trick with Nintendo, is like, they have the gimmick, like the 3D of the 3DS or the Switchable thing of the Switch, that they also realize that there's a big contingency of the user base that doesn't either really like or really use all that much. And so they can actually capitalize on that part of the user base. And at the same time, just like they did with the 3DS, they put out the 3DS XL. And so if you want the bigger 3DS, you know, like the bigger screen, if you want to take the gimmick even further, we can do that as well. It's a very Nintendo thing. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see either or both of those announced relatively soon. I think they said they're not going to make any hardware announcements around E3. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see what they do. But yeah, it's very
Nintendo. Yeah, but I think E3 is just dying, kind of. Like,
I know.
It's because that might be Nintendo can just do their Treehouse thing, and then Sony started doing that too.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just this year because Sony doesn't really have much to show. Maybe next year when they're really releasing their new console, and then they'd probably be showing like full-on Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima stuff. Maybe then they'll be back, because it still does have a lot of, you know.
Yeah. Let's come back to that topic here in just a second, because I actually think that's interesting. But I've heard the storm open up a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to make sure Spider gets a chance to jump in here.
Well, Cabbage mentioned Microsoft, and so I was kind of wondering if maybe they're playing a little bit of like, oh, we can do that too, when they see Nintendo pull features from a console and sell it for less, and then it sells well. So maybe there's just some copycatting going on. They're like, oh, I bet we could get some success from that.
Well, here's the thing about pulling features for Nintendo, why it works. And that's because I think 90% of the people that use the Switch are not like Cabbage.
Yeah, and I agree.
Because my hands don't work. Like, so I'm not ever going to use that as a fully portable console. It just won't ever work. But I think 90% of the user base takes the dumb thing everywhere. And I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of them were like Chad, and they had 18 of them just laying around like, hey, this was bad, I'm going to take my other one wherever I'm going, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point for parents who also game, where there's this like generational thing now that is pretty common, that parents and kids are both gaming. Parents are going to want the cool Switch that docks and can go on the big screen, and then they're going to want to buy the cheaper portable only dock for their kids, or Switch for their kids, that don't care about the docking feature. And so, yeah, there's definitely a market for both. Nintendo has such broad reach for being, you know, sometimes I think we kind of most narrow cast Nintendo as far as like their appeal, but their appeal goes so much deeper because of the nostalgia and everything else, that they really do have broad appeal and can fit into a bunch of different user bases. And so if they can make it practical, save some money on their end, up their profits, yeah, it makes total sense. I don't see that as much with Microsoft with the discless Xbox One, that also isn't cheaper, right? Like, that's what we talked about on the last show. I don't think the thing's actually cheaper, or at least significantly cheaper.
And they also package, for some reason, they do this redundant thing where they say, hey, this one comes with Game Pass, which includes these games, but we're also going to give you those games with codes or something. It's like, yeah. But you're giving me Game Pass. It's a very weirdly, like, mismanaged product. I don't know what they were doing there.
Yeah. But. Yeah. It's a test launch of a kind of a proof of concept to where they're going. But they could have definitely handled it better.
I wonder if they haven't, like, quite got over what happened with the Xbox One, where they started out saying, like, oh, well, it's going to be an always internet connected console. And so, and then they backed out. Like, are they still stuck in that mindset where they're trying to go down, like, push a new path, but then they start to get a little bit of resistance from their audience, and so they back out or try going different, you know, down a different avenue instead of just going forward with what they think will work?
Yeah. I'd actually forgotten about that whole thing with the Xbox One of the announcement.
Remember when everybody was real mad?
Yeah. Yeah, and now I can't imagine a console not connected to the internet. Like, I just assume. I sure hope the thing works if it's not connected to the internet. But, like, whatever. Like, at this point,
and it's also just funny because of where we've gone with games now. Like, not all, but I would say probably most of the top played games on console and PC require you to be online to play. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of funny that I'm not saying that there were legitimate criticism, because there definitely were, but it is funny that people got so mad over what Xbox was trying to lean into. They just did it a little too early, I think.
Yeah,
and you get used to where you live, because I'm no joke, guys. I mean, I didn't have internet two nights ago. Like, it just wasn't there.
And that's one of the criticisms. Yeah, definitely, that makes sense, because we don't really have, like, ubiquitous internet everywhere or whatever. So
I know it's really funny to listen to Tommy now, because he's lived with fiber for a year, and it's like, well, this is the way it is until you go somewhere where it's not, like here, and it's like, how do you live like this? You know, it's a very strange kind of a thing, but it really is still a thing that internet is not where it needs to be everywhere.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Really quick, I would love to hear just a little bit more now, because the topic of E3 came up, and we know at this point Nintendo, at least we're assuming Nintendo's going to do what Nintendo's done the past several years with the Nintendo Direct Live. We know Sony's not going to have a physical presence there. I'm assuming that they're going to have their, again, I can't remember the name of the thing.
Yeah, what do they call it?
Yeah, whatever they call it.
State of Play.
State of Play. Thank you. Can't ever.
It's terrible.
It's not great. Have they done another one of those, by the way? I haven't seen it.
I'm not aware of.
Yeah, no. I feel like I would know, you know? Like, I feel like I follow stuff close enough that I would know. But it just feels like they did one, and then they just kind of disappeared with it for a while. So I'm assuming they're going to do one of those around E3 and do some announcements and some gameplay and that kind of stuff to at least be a little bit newsy around E3. But all that said, we know Nintendo isn't going to have a press conference. They'll be there. We know Sony's not actually going to even really be there. Microsoft's kind of set up at this point to own the week. I don't know that they'll succeed in that, but they've got everything going. We'll see of the big publishers if they show up big or whatever. But what are you anticipating from E3 at this point, Cabbage?
Well, in terms of Microsoft, they'll probably do what they always do, which is they'll prop up their press conference by showing really good third-party titles and trying to make it seem like it's their games, even though it's not. and then like, not show any. Haven't they bought up a lot of smaller-ish developers over the last few years? And
yeah,
so you kind of hope they'd be doing some first-party stuff that sells, because that's what I want them to do again.
Yeah,
I want them to sell me on their console, like, because I'm one of those people. It's like, I don't have teams. I just want everything to be good. But it's hard not to be cynical when it's like they've been doing this for E3 with E3 for years, or even if they have a good press conference, you know, technically or presentation wise or whatever, like you usually go away from it thinking, well, but those are all games that are on like PC or PlayStation.
Yep.
Like, well, I don't really need their console. They never sell me on their console. So, and the only reason I have a 1S is because it's like the cheapest 4K Blu-ray player you can get. So I just use it for that. Like, otherwise, I would have sold it again already. So it's just.
Well, I think it's interesting that we got around to Microsoft, because I was looking this week at the new Minecraft shader thing that's being created. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's a guy. It's not Microsoft. This dude is making $28,000 a month on Patreon donations because he's making a Minecraft shader pack that is ridiculous. If you have not seen this thing, you need to go look it up, because I saw it and I literally nearly fell out of my chair. Like, it does not look like Minecraft.
Is that for the console versions, like for the 1X or whatever? Or?
I Google it. I have no idea. I just saw a video and I was like, oh my goodness.
It's on the Facebook page. I posted it.
Yeah, you did. Okay. Yeah. You did.
Way to go, Spider.
If you have not seen that, definitely go by and take a look at that, because
I think it's like ray tracing in Minecraft, isn't it? It's something ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
But I'm saying it makes a huge difference.
Oh yeah. And no, I did kind of see this.
That is and my point with all of this is that this is a guy that's doing this. This is not Microsoft, who owns the product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, seriously, this kid is making $28,000 a month from Patreon subscribers. That's waiting ridiculous. For this thing. And that just kind of shows me in a nutshell where Microsoft is at, because they could be doing that and they're not.
Yeah. That I think that's fair. There's so many things Microsoft could be doing that I'm like, why aren't you ahead of the game on this? But Spider, any thoughts from you on expectations for E3 this year?
Even though I'm not a Halo guy, I'm interested just to see what Halo Infinite is, because they teased it last E3 and then heard nothing about it since then. So
yeah.
But, I'm totally in Sony's pocket right now, but it's purely because there's just anything I want to play that could be, like, same thing Cabbage said, anything I want to play, I can play on PC. I don't need an Xbox. And you can actually get a 4K Blu-ray player, Cabbage, for $50 now from Best Buy, so there's cheaper options than the Xbox One S.
Last time I looked, I was like, they're all like, okay.
It was on sale at the time, but I mean, that happens all the time, so just keep your eye out if you need a cheaper one.
Sorry, Xbox. might be Cabbage gone, tried. Dude. You might get dusted, dude. You might have to Thanos that Xbox.
Have you played anything on your Xbox, Cabbage? Like, has there been any games that like you were excited about?
I had a one. I had like the original model, and I sold it at some point, and then I got a 1S because of the 4K Blu-ray thing, and because I'd had some friends say, hey, you know, there's games coming out, we're gonna play it, we're on Xbox. So I did play some like third party stuff there for a while, but then we kind of fell off those games, and it's just been sitting there, except for, like I said, like it's a streaming box and a 4K disc box.
Yeah.
So like, I haven't played a game on it in, I don't know, more than a year, at least, probably more than that.
Fair enough.
That's but I want to say I kind of forgot about Halo Infinite. Yeah. If that is like, I don't know what the hell it is, because we haven't told us.
But yeah,
if it's a really good game, maybe I will hold on to the console. I don't know. Like, it's they just gotta really sell me on that stuff, and they just haven't.
Do we know Halo Infinite's current gen game, or are we expecting that to be a big launch title for whatever the next thing is that they're going to show us at E3 this year?
I mean, I would guess that they do the thing that they're you know, we're trying to do more often now, which is like, yeah, you can play it on the one and we'll release it there.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a launch title for the new console and it's going to run way better. And, you know, kind of like what happened with like Destiny, the first Destiny or whatever.
Yeah.
So it could maybe happen, but
yeah, I think that sounds like the most likely.
So this is going way down a rabbit hole, but
like those.
Has anybody stopped to consider the overall view of the big three at this point? Like, I'm not sure that I feel good about anybody at this point other than Nintendo, because Nintendo's doing what Nintendo's always done.
Well, what's Sony?
the other two guys, well, Sony's doing what Sony always does, except they're not having a press conference this year. And they're not, they're going very Nintendo, and we don't know what's up with new hardware. I mean, everything's kind of in flux right now.
Yeah, so I would say on that, at least a little bit, I don't know if this is good or bad for Sony, but the thinking behind at least some of maybe what Sony's doing is looking at Nintendo and saying, Nintendo's kind of said, we're going to take this a different way and is doing plenty fine of reaching their consumers, of being able to connect with people and selling a console like gangbusters. Now, there's a lot of other reasons for that, obviously, but things that Sony has. So Sony has great first party titles and a really loyal fan base to those first party titles. And so, Microsoft is the biggest question mark as far as, you know, we know what they're trying to do through all the leaks and rumors and everything else. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be super surprised by the announcement of their console, but it's the kind of the practicality of it. Like, how are you going to sell this? Or are you going to come out? Now I got this in my head because we brought it up. Are you going to come out like you did with the Xbox One and just do this one stupid thing that's going to turn everybody off and just this massive backlash that's so easy in the gaming industry to have happen for the stupidest reasons. And going back to the Xbox One thing, we complained about that at the time. And so I'm going to, you know, stand by all the stuff we said about at the time. But gamers are fickle. Like, we've seen this over and over. We saw it with Blizzard recently. We talked about the Diablo mobile game and all that kind of stuff and how it just went so, so bad for them. Like, gamers are a fickle bunch, and it's very much groupthink. And so as soon as, like, a narrative takes off about what you're doing, true or false, you're kind of stuck with it. And I feel like Microsoft is really susceptible to something like that happening. That it could either be like Microsoft is changing the game at E3, or, oh my goodness, what are you doing, Microsoft? This is the stupidest thing we've ever seen.
And the crazy thing about the changing the game aspect of it is they really only need one really massive title. Like, if they got, say, the newest Grand Theft Auto, and that was a Microsoft thing, or if they got new Stellar Halo, and that was a Microsoft thing, or it's all about software, and right now they don't have it.
Yeah, man, that's interesting. So I don't know that Halo does it at this point. You know, like, I think Halo's kind of burning.
Halo is just an example, but you know where I'm going.
But I get what you're going, but I don't know what it could be. Like, it can't be Grand Theft Auto, because Grand Theft Auto is not going to give up a user base. You know, like, they sell 90 million copies of that game. They're not going exclusive. They don't want to box themselves in. Like, I'm really trying to think, like, what else is out there that could make that big of a splash that's not new IP?
I almost wonder if they've... also, the storm has cleared. I wonder...
Thank God you survived.
I'm glad you're safe.
Are you guys familiar with Google Stadia? I'm a few shows behind, so I don't know if you guys have gone over that. Okay, so I almost wonder if they have that ready, and that's what they're showing, because that's why they have this discless Xbox One, is they're like, hey, Google had it too, and maybe they showed it off first, but we also have it, and this is the route we're going. It feels like all three companies are really diverging. Like, Nintendo, you know, has always gone off into its own thing, but for a long time, Microsoft and Sony have been in this, like, all right, who's going to build the better box with the better games race? And it seems like they're going in very different directions now.
Yes. And I think that's what we expect to see at E3 is this kind of streaming hybrid box thing. And it's a big question of if that's what Sony is doing too. I don't know. And I think Sony is wise. They've already announced that they're, I think they said they're not even like talking about new hardware this year. Obviously they said it's not coming this year. Maybe they didn't say they're not talking about it this year.
Because there was already that PS5 article that got published what's his name? Is it not Mark Cerny? I can't remember his name. Whoever the architect was over the PS4, who's working on the PS5 now.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And it was, you know, just like traditional next-gen console kind of step-up stuff. That's great. They didn't have any of those kind of juicy things like the Microsoft stuff or whatever. And so it could be Sony just like saying, hey, let's hang out and see like how people respond to this Microsoft thing. Because Sony has made a killing off of just copying what everybody else does. And so
doing
like
it better, and they always do it better.
Oftentimes, that's absolutely true. So coming out of E3, they may be going, okay, Microsoft announced this streaming hybrid thing and people really took to it. So we're going to do that too, or say, hey, Microsoft really flubbed it with this thing. We're going to hold back, or we're going to announce it in a different way, whatever it is, you know, but I think there's a good chance that Sony's just like saying, hey, we're in a position right now where we can sit and wait and see kind of what the gaming culture responds to Microsoft like, and then we can follow up from there. And so, yeah, I would expect that Sony does a huge, big press thing later this year. I think we'll see a big Sony blowout thing in the fall, just kind of off the back of E3.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they'll still do their PlayStation Experience or if State of Play is going to replace that, too.
Yeah, that's a good question. But I would imagine it would look similar. I would think they would do something similar to that. So, yeah. All that being said, tons of questions about what we're going to see at E3. The press conferences that are confirmed at E3, we still have Bethesda, UB, and Square Enix. We have EA doing their own thing separate, but they're doing a thing that like 3 days leading up to E3 or whatever that they've already announced, but not actually at E3 for a press conference thing either. And we're still going to see tons of games and everything else. The PC gaming show's happening, which is fun. We like that one. And so, it's definitely, it feels like the spectacle of E3 is slowly dying. And in a couple of years, I wouldn't be surprised if it's wrapping up.
And what
I wonder,
I was just going to mention that it has happened all at once. Like it was like, okay, we had a couple of years of, yeah, that's really good. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, we're not gonna do that.
Yep, maybe. I mean, I think last year was really good. Like, I enjoyed E3 last year. You know, like, it was still a big spectacle. Like, we had that era of E3 a decade ago that it sucked. Then it kind of resurged from that. I just don't know if there's a resurge this time. Now, if Sony shows back up next year, they make it a big thing, then maybe it keeps on going. But if Sony's not there, if Nintendo's doing their weird thing around it or whatever, I think the presence of Nintendo at E3 is still a big deal. And so even though they don't do a press conference, I think the fact that they have a big booth and do the show, you know, the floor and all that stuff, I think is significant. If they pulled out too, then obviously it dries up.
The funny thing about Nintendo to me is that I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Miyamoto is there and he's walking around.
Sure.
And he pops up in random different places. And as long as that happens, Nintendo, like, for better or worse, he's a big portion of Nintendo. So whether or not they have announcements, as long as he keeps popping up places, at least I'm thinking, hey, they're still paying attention because he's a big kid. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah, and that's the kind of culture around Nintendo that people love. And so, I don't know. We'll talk again about E3. Obviously, we're going to do our big E3 stuff this year, and so we'll be having fun with it regardless of what it is. But it may be more in memorandum of E3 this year as well, it is.
I was just going to say, I'm curious, because you mentioned the press conferences we know are happening. I'm really curious to know what Bethesda does, because I feel like none of their first-party games are ready.
The one I know that they're planning to bring is Doom Eternal.
Oh, well, in terms of, okay, so what I mean is, like, obviously they publish games, you know.
Oh, right.
And so, okay. That's what I'm thinking it's going to be. It's just all, you know, Doom and, like, maybe a Wolfenstein and whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
I think they publish Arkane's games too, right?
I think that's right.
Dishonored and Prey and all that, yeah. So they're going to have that stuff, and they those things could have a chance to have more spotlight because of the stuff that isn't there. Right. But like, I'm curious if, because like, this could be a big missed opportunity for Bethesda to get even bigger, you know, grab of the spotlight because they just happen to not be ready. Like, there's no way that Elder Scrolls 6 and whatever that Star, whatever it is ready. So to show anything except another font. So
that's fair.
Yeah, those are like 2023 games.
Yeah.
There are ways off. But I don't separate Doom from Bethesda that much, like as a radically separate thing from them as a publisher. Like, I feel like their publishing arm is still, you know, a big deal for them as brand. You know what I'm saying? And so I think, honestly, they're better off showing, you know, Doom Eternal, making a big deal out of it, than they were with Fallout 76 or, you know.
Oh, yeah. People actually want to play Doom Eternal.
Right. That's,
sorry, I know some people like the game, but...
Man, I keep on going on rabbit trails now, but what a year of, like, disappointment in games with Fallout 76 and then Anthem being kind of this big dud, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. I played the beta, open beta for a little bit, and it was so buggy that I couldn't deal with it. Kept going. But what were your thoughts on it?
On Anthem?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm gonna be honest. I played it because of the EA Access program thing. So they have like two different versions of it, and if you do the 15 a month, you get full access to new games even on launch day, which included that. And I had already been doing it because I'd been playing Battlefield 5. So I was like, oh, I'll just keep it for another month and I'll play Anthem for way cheaper than buying it, you know, full price. And, you know, I played through the campaign and did a little bit of in-game stuff, but it's a game that does not learn any lessons from other, whatever we're calling these games, live service, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that goes into it. There was a really great article, really lengthy. I believe it was Kotaku, maybe it was Polygon. People probably know about it. Really in-depth article with a lot of anonymous BioWare employees talking about the process that, you know, the development. Yeah. And it sounded like absolute hell. Like, it does not sound like a game that was set up. It was basically set up to fail. That's kind of the way BioWare's been going, unfortunately. So
it's a bummer.
The other thing is that I've been playing The Division 2.
I was gonna ask you about that, because that's the other example of that, you know, The Division was kind of like that. It was kind of like, and then now you're playing Division 2 and you're telling me it's great. So.
It is great. Yeah, it's like, it's literally everything that, like, Anthem has its great Iron Man suits. And I will say that never really gets old, like launching off in the suit and flying around. That's always great. They really nailed that. But like, everything else is so bland and uninspired and forgettable. And The Division 2 is just like a game that feels like and I didn't play a lot of the first one, so I can't really properly compare it to that. I'm only comparing it to like other games like it. And it feels like a game to me where they're like looking at other of these games. I hate calling them live service. It's really dumb, but I guess that's what we're calling them.
Sure.
They're looking at all those other games and like seeing the issues players tend to have, or, you know, the pitfalls you can have in the end game and a lot of stuff like that. And it really feels like they addressed it for me. I guess a lot of people are still complaining about this game on the subreddit because there's always those people. But I think the end game is that, and this is the best that I've ever seen in this kind of game. It's really grabs you. It really paces the you know, mechanics or features out really well, so that it feels like there's always kind of some new little thing you're discovering or now taking part in the world. Just has a really nice flow to it. It's really fun to play with friends. It's kind of what I wanted a game like Destiny or Destiny 2 to be, but I just think it does a better job of it. So,
yeah, that's what I've heard in general as well, and so it's good to hear that firsthand. While we're kind of transitioning onto that, other games you've been playing, Cabbage, that you want to talk about?
Sure, I'll just talk really quick about Sekiro. So, and I haven't finished it. I need to go back. I got a little distracted because I've been playing Division 2 when I can because a friend of mine got it. So then that's like all I'm doing with game time. But yeah, I mean, I've always loved the From Software games. And before, Bloodborne was my favorite. And this is definitely my favorite now. Nice. The direction they're going with this, because it's not a Souls game, even though it's a Souls-like, you know, yeah. Because it's a new franchise. They're able to take ideas and general concepts from that franchise, but not be beholden to a lot of the things that a lot of the fans would probably expect. And I know a lot of people went out and got Sekiro and were disappointed because it doesn't play exactly like Dark Souls. But I think in a lot of ways, it's a lot better. It's a lot more intuitive and exciting in the way that the combat works. And I personally never really got into the stuff with Dark Souls where it's like, hey, you got to min-max these stats to do these perfect builds. Like, I never really did that.
I know a couple of guys that love Dark Souls because they do all that crap and they get some sort of weird sadistic pleasure out of beating it on the hardest possible difficulty. I don't want to do that. So if you tell me that this game doesn't do that and it's better, I'm more likely to pick that up and try it.
Yeah, it relies way more on just your skill as a player. You know, there are skill points that you get and you can unlock these different abilities and stuff. And definitely certain things against certain bosses really do kind of, you know, shift the tide for you, whatever. Like, but at the end of the day, it's all about like how you parry and how you're reacting to the enemy. And it just leans more into the direction they were going with Bloodborne, which I liked, which, you know, Bloodborne got rid of your shield. There's no blocking. There's no, you know, turtling around in that game like people sometimes do in Dark Souls. You have to really focus on, you know, in that game it was mostly dodging. There's some sort of parrying stuff. In Sekiro, it's all about your parries and your posture and like learning how exactly to time that and when you should do it or when you need to dodge or when you need to jump or whatever. And there's like two or three different ways of avoiding things, like avoiding hits in the game. And you have to learn the cues. But once you get it down, like I will say, and I've heard this from a lot of people, the first 2 or 3 hours of the game, I was a little mixed. I wasn't sure how I felt about it. I was just kind of getting wrecked. And I was kind of like, I don't know, like, is it me or is it the pairing that doesn't work? But you just kind of key into it and eventually you get it. And you also have to, like, if you're coming into this and you're a big Dark Souls player, you have to like try to unlearn a lot of the stuff that game like hammered into your head. Because you don't play this game the same way. And there's things you can do in the game that you can rely on that like you wouldn't be used to. Whereas in Dark Souls, it's like you get stuck with, again, it's sort of like this turtling thing of like just sort of like standing there and blocking. But in this game, you don't have stamina. You can always sprint. You can always hold down the sprint button and run around dudes. And you'd think that'd make the game like too easy or something. But no, they have the enemy structured to, you know, react to that. It's like the enemies are very different. They behave very differently than a lot of the Dark Souls enemies. So I don't know. I love it. I think it's their best game.
By the way, just randomly scrolling through Twitter, there's apparently a mod where you can have Shrek as a boss in Sekiro.
Oh my God. Well, that's yeah.
That's
and so
cool.
I'm watching a giant Shrek chase around the dude. And like,
but can you make Sekiro donkey? So that's
that like, would be amazing. Yeah. That would be fantastic. So, Spider, what about you? What have you been playing?
Let's see. No, sorry. It just takes me a second to get off of mute. What have I been playing? I should have been ready for that. Oh, okay. So there's this game called Idle Dungeons. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. But basically, so are you guys familiar with Cookie Clicker? I know this is going to sound horrible.
Nope.
Okay.
What happened in that storm?
Some shit went down, man. That's all I can say.
Some weird games came out of the Nether Realms. Like...
No, so so it's like a clicker game. Basically, what you do is it's Dungeons and Dragons based. So you start out, your party's on the left side of the screen, and you've got enemies coming at you from the right side of the screen, and your party all attacks the enemies automatically. You can click on them yourself as well to help out the party, but they will attack on their own. And so basically, as you gain gold from killing enemies, you can upgrade the heroes and add more heroes to your party. Each dungeon starts over after you beat it, so it, with like a different setting and a new set of heroes with, but you get to carry, so all the heroes get reset back to their original levels, but you get any equipment or gems, or there's different currencies and stuff that you can all gather that carries through to your next dungeon. But I mean, it's called Idle Dungeon just because basically you don't have to do a whole lot. Like, you have to upgrade your heroes and keep them fighting, and you can even just leave it on, and like, it's running right now on my computer while I'm out cleaning the car, and then I'll go back in and start playing with it for, you know, 15 minutes and then go do something else. So it's not something you need super interactive with, but I'm having fun with it so far. We'll see how long I stick with it. I just barely started playing it on Wednesday, so.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I like that. That sounds good.
What's the name of it one more time?
It is Idle Dungeons.
Idle Dungeons.
It is available on pretty much everything except for iPhone and Android phones. You can get on any tablet or iPad, or,
and it's free to play on Steam.
Yes. That's so lovely. If you just want to try it out and see if you like it, there's no cost to it. So it's 100% all microtransactions if you want to buy special characters or cosmetic stuff or whatever. But you can just go ahead and play the game without paying a dime if you want to. So
I have to be mad though, because it has microtransactions. Like, that's what the internet tells me.
So. Don't believe everything you read on the internet, Cabbage.
But I have to. Reddit says I'm not a true gamer.
Wait, does the internet say that you have to believe everything that's on the internet?
I don't know. They act like it. So
you better Google it and find out.
I'll Google it. Google will tell me.
Very cool. Anything else you've been playing, Spider?
My usual Final Fantasy Record Keeper on mobile. I'm trying to think what else I've played. I know I beat a few things since we had our last round table. I beat Mario Plus Rabbids. I loved that. Nice. I haven't played through the co-op missions yet. I have a neighbor that also has it. So I'm going to get together with him and play through those. That'll be fun. Let's see. Oh, played some Tetris. I posted that article on the Facebook page about how if you have a Amazon Prime Twitch account, then you can get that free Nintendo for up to a year or something like that. So I tried out Tetris 99, had a lot of fun with that. I haven't been back to that in about a week, but I'll probably pick it up again today or tomorrow. And what's the other? Oh, I played a little bit just through the Nintendo, like the old school game score, whatever that thing is that comes with your Nintendo Online, just to kind of see how it worked and compare it to how my SNES Classic works.
Very nice. Jamie, have you played anything?
Well, believe it or not, I have actually been sort of, I've been off of POE for about a week. I haven't had time to really play it, but we played Toadjam and Earl, and this is a good time to bring that up. If you haven't been by the Patreon page, you need to go by and check that out, because Tommy and I are playing Toadjam and Earl and not being real good at it. That's the good entertainment right there.
Yeah. If you want to see us not make it very far in a video game, you've got your opportunity over at Patreon.
And let me just put it to you this way. It wasn't all my fault. I was actually really pretty good.
That's fair.
Uh, So yeah, definitely go by there and so, check that out.
So let me ask you, as a game that we've been talking about for years because we contributed to the Kickstarter like 5 years ago or whatever, but more importantly, as a game that you and I grew up on and just loved as kids, now a remake 20 some years later or whatever, how you feel about it?
Dude, I love it. Yeah. I can't wait to spend more time with it. And you guys that are on the table with us are probably laughing, but if you have a chance to pick this up, it's worth it.
I'm still curious to have somebody play it who didn't play the original, that doesn't have the nostalgia factor that we have with it, to see if they just think it's the stupidest, most ridiculous, terrible game of all time. Because I could easily see that. Like, I could easily see somebody who never touched it, isn't familiar with the franchise, picking it up and going, this is just flat dumb and bad. Like,
I'll play it and let you know, because I did not ever play it back in the day.
Perfect.
Yeah, I actually heard about the game originally from listening to the show, like like whenever that was 10 or so years ago. Man, like, man. It's a game that just never, to be honest, I literally can't tell you what was it on originally, what console.
Genesis.
Genesis. Yeah.
Okay, didn't even know that. Yeah, I've never really been familiar with the franchise. I watched the video, and I'm gonna be honest, I did not. I always had imagined the game, like I never looked up anything. And I was like, this looks totally different than what I was picturing in my head. I was like, I thought you were on like a overworld. And I was like, are they going to go into a mission? I was like, no, that's the game. Like, you're always on this weird little like top down isometric thing. It looks interesting. It looks like it'd be really fun co-op. Like,
it is really fun co-op. Yeah. I don't think I have ever played Toe Jam and Earl other than when we got this one from Kickstarter just to fire it up and play with it a little bit. I have never really played this game solo. Like, it's a game that I've only ever played co-op.
I have played it solo. It's not made to be played solo.
Yeah.
It is a co-op title.
It does look like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Even with I love the fact that they let you do the split screen thing, even with the online, like I could do the, you know, just full screen of my view or whatever. But like, just again, that nostalgia thing of having the split screen when you're not close to each other and it coming back to the full screen.
Did it do that in the original game?
It did. Yeah,
exactly. That is actually impressive.
Yeah, like, it felt like so like edgy, like, you know, yeah, like that's so like advanced really cool. At the time. That when you found each other, even like you, like Toe Jam and Earl would like, when you came into a map together and went back to full screen, it'd be like, oh, hey, Toe Jam, hey, or, you know, like it just, like there was something really cool about how that worked. And so to have that still kind of recreated, even in an online co-op, is really fun. Again, if you're not nostalgic about it, it doesn't matter to you. You probably don't care or you're annoyed by it. But playing the original, that's a really cool touch that I appreciate.
The thing that scares me about it is that I know you and I are going to put way, way, way more hours into it this summer than really should be required.
Probably.
Because I like we did that, what you saw in the video as the first run. I can guarantee you we will do it again because we're going to beat it.
Yes.
That's one of those things. That's a requirement. And we're going to go back to it. It's a lot of fun. If you play it and you don't think it's fun, we'd like to hear about that. Definitely. Also, because like, I can't imagine somebody picking this up and not enjoying it. But again, we played the original.
Yeah, and with the caveat, and it really is designed for co-op. Like, I could easily see you not having much fun with it playing solo. It's not a game that's designed for that. Like, the name is Toe Jam and Earl. Like, you gotta have them both. And so, yeah, if you're just running around by yourself, I could see it not being that much fun. But with another person and just stupid fun, it's a pretty great game. So.
And if you want to see something else that might make your eyes bleed, check out our YouTube page where you can see Tommy catching every fish available in Red Dead Redemption. Like, it is freaking unbelievable.
Hey, it's the best fishing in any game ever.
It is the best fishing in any game ever. It's fantastic. I would play a whole game just that fishing.
So let me just ask this. This is totally the rabbit hole show. Because I have to ask, because I've been watching it for like several hours now. And I understand that it's the best fishing out there. But can either of you explain to me why? And remember, I don't have the controller in my hand. So explain to me why it's the best fishing out there.
I'll let you take it first if you want, Cabbage.
Well, it's been a while since I played, but from what I remember, it just, like, I think it just nails the, like, how do I say it? Like, I don't know.
It nails the realism of fishing. Like, it looks like that's what fishing looks like when we did it as kids, although we weren't nearly that good.
It's just one of those things that, yeah, when you have it, like, when you're actually playing it, like, the feeling of casting and, like, reeling in and, like, just, like, slowly reeling in, like, while you're just sort of waiting for a nibble and, like, tug and it gets, like, super exciting and, like, the way you control it is actually, Rockstar Games, one of the big criticisms always is a lot of their controls are kind of janky. But, like, they just, like, got the fishing down so well with the controller. Like,
yeah, the feedback, the tactile response you get through the controller is just perfect. Like, it just, like, you know exactly what's happening. Like, you could do it with your eyes closed almost, like, just with the feel of the controller. And, it's hard, but it's not impossible, which is important. Like, it should be challenging, but it's, like, you will fail, but you will also succeed in really exciting ways. You will feel, like, a sense of accomplishment in doing it, but not just, like, want to throw your controller across the room. It takes time. You kind of have to learn the flow of it, but I don't know. It's just really, really fun. It just nails fishing in a way.
It's essentially, it's essentially, like, a little mini rhythm game, but, like, just the feeling. And, like, obviously, tying in the scenery and being out on like a little boat or something, and the random little score will pop in or something. And it's like, or when you're out with somebody and the great conversations that are happening, like, it's great.
The atmosphere obviously plays a huge part in it too. That's all of Red Dead. Everything is atmosphere in that game, the fishing included. It's a blast. And for me, honestly, one of the things I loved about it most is it just was another way for me to explore the world. That, like, I pulled out this map that has all these fish marked on it, and I'm like, okay, let's go find this one, and then I'm going through places I've never been before because I haven't progress that far in the story yet, and just seeing the world and, like, coming across new little outposts and some random side quests along the way, and just it's just really rewarding, the whole experience around not just the fishing mechanic itself, but just fun to go and explore the world in that way. And so, just another one of those little things that just shines in a fantastic game. So,
well, and the crazy thing to me about Red Dead, just real quick, the reason why I've been kind of wading through the amazing amount of video that I had, the backlog, is that you notice the little things. Like, I just came across the clan thing that you mentioned with the two rednecks. Like, that was really cool. It's all about the detail in that game. And I came across that, and the other thing that makes me laugh is that you're also way into being a horseman now. Like, you're way into being good with the horse. And every time that you get real fancy with it, like, you take a header. Yes. And then, like, you do bad things to that horse that I'm going to.
Talk about the bad controls. They're just, randomly just over the top of the horse. I'm like, what the crap just happened?
It always happens when you're going like Mach 2, and I'm like, you're going as fast as you can possibly go. And I'm like, okay, here he comes. And you hear him go, ow! it is the most interesting.
It's very Grand Theft Auto in that way, where you're like zooming through Liberty City, and like hit a
bust through the windshield.
It's very similar feeling.
They don't wear seatbelts in Grand Theft Auto, and there's no airbags. It's just you hit something, you're flying through the windshield
every time. So. All that being said, I got to wrap because I'm being beckoned at this point. Any final closing thoughts before we finish up?
We need to play more games. Yeah, that's what sure. I think.
Absolutely. Summer's coming. Hopefully that's that'll be a bit of a help with that. I agree. So,
also, everybody already has but seen it, but in-game's really good.
Everybody except us.
Go see it.
So, yes. Apparently, it's really good. So you liked it, Cabbage, I'm taking?
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite of all those movies now.
That's great. That's encouraging. So,
let me just ask this. This is a dumb question from a guy that hasn't seen it. But they named it Endgame, and so I'm thinking to myself, okay, we get to the end of this, then where are we gonna go?
That's the question. It's all about the journey, Jamie.
And so
it's all about the friends we make along the way.
Here's what I'm gonna ask you, sir. After seeing that, do you feel good about the future of the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, but I look at it a little differently than a lot of people. It's the end of a saga, and that's what they're saying it is. Obviously, we knew it wasn't the end of all of it. It's never been presented that way, and obviously isn't, because we literally have a Spider-Man movie coming out in like a couple months or something. I mean, to me, I've always liked the movies, but this one made me like them even more, kind of. And so, like, I'm excited to see how they manage to set up a new arc. But whether it's good or not doesn't really matter to me, because we have these movies that there's some blunders. I've been watching back through them now, and some of them are still pretty bad. But there's the ones that are great, ones that are probably going to grow on me. And just the overall thing, though, knowing where they go, knowing how it ends, is like, I just like it as a whole. So I just don't, to me, it's like, sure, they might, this shows that they can do a saga really well, but that doesn't mean they're going to have the same creatives on for the next 10 years to be able to do it again. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And with all of that, he's got to go. So,
come see us, Twitter at podcastgu, Facebook page, email gamingcensored@gmail.com, voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
You can hit us up all kinds of different ways, so come talk to us. But for now, I got to go, so we're out. We will thank you guys for being here. Go check out the website. Click on the Become a Patron link if you want to join us on the roundtable. We will see you soon for another show. For now, we are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.